So this is dispatch number two, another day of breakfast with Douglas and Andrew on the trails of tips. We're now on day eight, completed 7 days. It's the morning of day eight. We haven't seen any movies yet today. We last recorded on Monday, on day five. So you got to do Rancho this last week.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
You got to sit down and talk with the Hatter.
I did.
So you talked about, what movie was it? Night Moves?
Talked about Night Moves, which I was very upset about.
I did not see.
I was sad that I got to talk about Night Moves because it was right after we had watched one of my favorite movies of the fest, which was The Double. And I was like, no, let's talk about the other Jesse Eisenberg movie.
Yeah, you guys did the Eisenberg Double.
Mm-hmm.
With The Double and Night Moves. Yeah. I love The Double though.
The Double was so, Andrew, I keep saying it. It's like I was watching Brazil all over again. I love that movie.
Well, it was obvious that was like one of his, the things he was pulling from to mm-hmm. make that movie. Because
mm-hmm.
you could see these machines, which even the office itself felt so much like that office that we go to see the beginning of Brazil.
Exactly.
Right? All you needed at the end was someone going, we need that form or we're not doing the work.
There was even a point in the movie where, I'm pretty sure this happens in Brazil as well, where Jesse Eisenberg goes to this guy and he's like, of course I exist, I am here, just put me back on the system. And they're like, well, you need like a B28 form for that, and we don't have it. So since you're not on the system, you don't exist, clearly. And I'm pretty sure that exact repartee, that exact set of, that discussion happened in Brazil at some point, whether it was over bottle, no, Buttle was the guy that was alive. Tuttle that got killed, or Buttle that was, whatever it was. It was crazy.
But I'm curious because now when we recorded the first weekend of the festival was mm-hmm. over. Now we're getting into the mid area.
Yeah.
You know, people are starting to get a little sleepier.
Yeah.
Things are starting to wane. I don't think you've dropped any films yet. You haven't.
I have not. I almost missed one.
You almost missed one. Yeah, that morning we
were. The morning after Ryan's little get together.
After the pub night.
Yes, I was like, oh. But
that was the same morning I almost missed one because we both had 9 a.m. that morning.
Yep. And I trudged through and I made it just in time with like 5 minutes to spare. Yeah.
So, like, last time we talked about like our favorites at the time, mm-hmm. and we're going to get back to that topic,
mm-hmm.
but I want to kind of go into disappointments a little bit.
Yeah, sure, thanks. A little bit of coffee.
Thank you so much. So yeah, I wanted to get into a few disappointments because I know we've hit a few.
Yeah, we have.
We finally hit some bad films.
Yeah.
I think we have found the dud of the festival, the one that's just so bad, and it's this Child of God. Am I going too far? Do you have one that's worse?
No, I don't have one that's worse. But what I do want to say about that movie is I'm actually disappointed isn't quite the word, but I'm sad about that movie for more than one reason. One, I didn't like it. So there's that, right? That's mm-hmm. a simple reason. But two, if you really think about it, I know it's hard sometimes with movies that you really don't like, but try and separate your dislike for the movie from your dislike or like of the actors. And if you really think hard enough about it,
mm-hmm.
it's so sad to think that the truth of the matter is that main actor in that movie probably did a really good job.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but your perception of that performance is so solid by how much you did not like the movie that you'll probably never be like, oh, that actor is good, you know?
I agree with you. That movie, like, he grunted really well. No, the thing about it is that, like, I almost want to put it akin to a Terrence Malick film, because the thing about Terrence Malick's films is that when they come out, they become this really obtuse thing
mm-hmm.
that if you're not ready to watch a Terrence Malick film,
oh, yeah.
you're automatically going to hate it.
Yeah.
And this movie presents itself in that manner. I mean, it has a bit more dialogue, but I don't know how much more mm-hmm. than a Terrence Malick film, mm-hmm. at least a bit more understandable dialogue. But it spends so much time with the guy just being this, I don't even know what word to call him, because he's not a cowboy, he's not a caveman, he's somewhere in between. And it kicks off with this thing of him getting kicked off his land.
Yeah.
Right? And then it just goes into all of these things as he's in the wood, him just running around and finding a dead woman in a car and deciding necrophilia is a good idea.
Yeah.
And it goes further, guys. It's crazy. It doesn't make sense. And like, I had already mentally checked out from that film like around 20 minutes in. I only stayed for two reasons. Number one, I felt bad last year when I ran out of a film, when I mm-hmm. gave up and then I left, because like, I really do believe that you can't really categorically say this movie's bad if you only watch the first hour.
Yeah.
If you watch 1 hour and 50 minutes of an hour and 51 minute movie, you still can't say it's bad. You have to get that last minute, right? I truly believe that. I wanted to stay around so that I could say it was bad. And two, watching this movie as what it was, I'm like, there's going to be walkouts. I want to count. And I think I counted 12. I don't know if there were more walkouts in this movie. I've had two movies where like after I watched it, I knew I wasn't going to like this movie really early in, and I stayed to count walkouts. The other movie was The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears.
Wow.
Which I did not like. I think I counted around 5 walkouts in that movie, but I was in a position where I couldn't really see everyone. It wasn't like the theater we were in for Child of God.
Yeah.
It was in the blower and I was downstairs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to see everybody.
And the thing about that movie is that, well, I should probably say that it might not have been a greatest idea for me to go to that movie, because it didn't lie about itself.
Well, no, that's true. And I know why you went to that movie, and why you went to that movie, the same reason why I went to that movie. And that would be summed up in two words as Cormac McCarthy. Right? Well,
yeah, for Child of God.
Yeah. For
Body of Your Tears, the reason I went was, number one, it fit my schedule, which is a reason for at least like 5 or 6 movies this year. Number two, it just seemed different than what I would normally pick. Because like, there comes a point in the movies I'm picking in the festival where I kind of throw out like carte blanche, like recommend me some things.
But yeah, California.
Thank you.
Want to be back?
Yep, that's
I'll be right back with the toast. You guys need anything else?
No, we're good. Thank you so much. I did say this was breakfast with Douglas and Andrew, right?
Yes, and we have just gotten breakfast. And I have to say, I don't think I ever fully appreciated your love for eggs, Andrew. We've been here how long now?
Well, it's day 8. So
we've been here 8 days.
Yeah.
Right? Out of those 8 days, I think we've had eggs for breakfast 6 times.
Breakfast, it's breakfast, Douglas. You need some eggs in your system. So yeah, with the Body of Your Tears, it advertised itself exactly as what it was.
Mm.
Right? And with the fact that I think the only movie that kind of fits into what it was that I've seen before is Suspiria, which I don't know if you've seen.
No, I haven't.
It's a Dario Argento film. It's really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I like that movie more because it tried to be more of a plot, somewhat.
Okay.
But just the colors, it's like when you finally see that French art film.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide, okay, we're going to stop the story right now, and we're going to just go in black and white and have this thing do something relative to stop motion cameras.
Oh, wow.
With imagery. And all of these, it just decides to do different things on a whim, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I almost wanted to consider it like a VHS, where it's just horror vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't even think of it that much, that well.
Oh wow, okay, I hear you. But I didn't watch that movie. So I unfortunately cannot share, or maybe fortunately, I cannot share in your pain. I wonder what Dud I could talk about. So there have been a few that I didn't really enjoy that I thought I was going to enjoy. And I think we've spoken about some from the last podcast, but I think the one I'm going to highlight, well, obviously we talked about Child of God, is I'm the Same, I'm Another. No, I wouldn't want to go as far as to say that this is a bad movie, because it's not. It's very pretty, and it does tell, you know, an interesting story, if perhaps a somewhat messed up one. Essentially, this movie is about a family, a mommy, a daddy, and a wee little girl who get into a spot of trouble. And the mom and dad are killed somehow, and the daughter is kidnapped, right? Mm-hmm. And we come in to the movie after all of this has happened, and the daughter is now, you know, kidnapped. She is taken against her will, or I assume so. And the whole movie is really about the bond between kidnappee and kidnapper, right?
Yeah.
And you know, that's an interesting concept, especially the way they take it. But the way it's done, it's very long-winded and very hard, not hard to follow, but difficult to stick around for, because while it's a pretty movie, while it's an interesting concept, about five words get spoken throughout its, I don't know, probably 2 hour length. And there are movies that can pull that off, and I'll talk about another one in a second, or when we get to our happy movies. But this is not one, I don't think, that does that. This is one of those where I have to be like, I appreciated that movie. So this movie is, and what I like about the movie, or I don't know, it's kind of like a Stockholm Syndrome movie. So at the end of the movie, you think that they're actually father and daughter,
yeah,
the way that they interact together. And you know, everything is done well. It's just, wow. For me to go 2.5 hours or however long it was without any dialogue and just, like, you know, pictures of beaches and just watching slow things happen, I'm just like, okay, all right. This is a large pill to swallow.
So here we can shift into the movies we like. Also,
yeah.
This, but I mean, we already kind of mentioned The Double, which,
yes,
was just like we recorded the last one before we went to The Double.
Yes.
So guys, we love The Double.
Yes, we do.
I think that's still my favorite so far.
It is one of three.
Mm-hmm. No, I could make a list of like top six,
mm-hmm,
at this point without an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to, if someone like gun to head asked what's my favorite right now, I think it's still The Double. But I'm hoping that today will
Miyazaki
change that.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, we have two that I'm really hopeful for. One is Miyazaki and the other is Mobius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But for me, Andrew, in terms of my number one, I can't give you a number one. Because, well, you don't understand, because you have not seen the second movie that, or actually,
go
two
for
of
it.
These movies
go
that I've spoken about. But so, while The Double is great, and it has this kind of quirky, Terry Gilliam-esque, French movie-esque sort of feel to it, which, you know me, I'm just in all of those camps,
mm-hmm,
right? There's just something to be said about the raw viscerality of blue is the warmest color.
Can I start making fun of for making up a word?
Yes,
there?
Yes, you can.
Okay. I don't think that's a word.
I'm not sure either. I probably should have said visceral nature, but whatever.
That would have seemed like the normal,
yeah,
terminology,
yeah,
phrasing, whatever.
Yes, but go ahead, make fun of me. So that movie is just balls to the wall awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is like, you either love it or you hate it. I love it. And it's one of those movies, just like I'm the Same, I'm Another, hard to get through, but for me, it's worth it, right? But let's not talk about that because we spoke about it already. I'm going to talk about another Blue movie, Andrew. I'm going to talk about Blue Ruin, which is so good. It is a revenge movie. It's an American revenge movie. And as I said before, so I'm the Same, I'm Another is an example of how maybe not to do the whole don't talk too much.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Ruin is an example of exactly how to do it, right? So I think Blue Ruin is a little bit more verbose than I'm the Same. But mm-hmm. it's just, Andrew's fantastic. So the revenge film is one of those where you kind of have to figure it out as you go.
Yeah, we're good.
Thanks.
More coffee?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, so you have to figure it out as you go, right? You're kind of thrown into the middle of the story, and then you realize, holy crap, there's actually a whole lot more story left to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't want to ruin this movie because almost anything I could say ruins the movie.
Okay,
But just to say that the way that they use dialogue is great. They don't need the dialogue ever in the film, but it's only to reveal a little bit more that you didn't know,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, you know, who
that
am
sounds,
I?
That sounds what like the situation? That sounds like how the kind of way I like first army films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not revenge ever, but
yeah.
the way he does dialogue,
mm-hmm.
whenever he has a scene, it always feels like it's a mystery scene,
yeah.
where you're almost playing cat and mouse in dialogue, and you're going like, oh, so that's a little bit more gem in there that I didn't know about
mm-hmm.
every 2 seconds.
Yeah. So how this movie is, there's this homeless guy, right, that you start off with, and you see him, he doesn't get into trouble, but he breaks into somebody's house so he can take a shower kind of thing, and then the cops come for him, but you realize they're not really coming for him to arrest him,
mm-hmm.
right? She sits him down because clearly she doesn't really know him, but she, you know, has some sort of relationship with him and kind of feels for him for some reason. You find out why very soon, but she's like, okay, and she has to be very calm. She's like, you're not in trouble. We just wanted to bring you in to tell you something because we just found out, and we want you to be like, you know, not necessarily among friends, but in a safe place when you hear it, so you know, like, some big crazy news is coming, and that really sets the tone
yeah.
for the whole movie. And it's just, Andrew, words cannot describe. I'm actually getting goosebumps while I am describing it to you. I'm going to vote for this movie for Blackberry People's Choice Award.
No, you're not.
And
don't do it.
And
don't do it.
I'm actually going to vote for all of the movies that I like. But if this one goes there, I'm definitely watching it again. Because, oh my God. And you better come watch it with me.
I will. I'm going to see probably anything that ends up in the choice.
Yeah.
As long as I get in.
Yeah.
What do I want to push? You know, I'm going to talk about the film I saw last night.
Mm-hmm.
Rigor Mortis.
Rigor Mortis, really?
Right. I went in not knowing much. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I kind of like the midnight films.
Yeah.
I like what they represent. I like the fun they are because. Sorry. I mean, there are a good amount of them which are just like crazy horror,
mm-hmm.
and we have our issues with horror,
mm-hmm.
but some of them are just downright fun, and
yeah.
you've heard me say this over and over. I think I've been having more of a fun festival this year than like the deep prolific masters of filmmaking. I mean, I have a few of those films coming up, so who knows, maybe it'll shift. But Rigor Mortis, if you didn't know, it's a Hong Kong movie, and apparently it kind of ties into this vampiric trilogy, which I'm now going to look up.
Okay.
Which people refer to as the hopping vampire. because like this guy, this Hong Kong director, he wants to make a vampire movie, but vampires in China mm-hmm. aren't what we know vampires to be.
Okay.
And he decided he wanted vampires to have more oomph, so he made the hopping vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really a part of the trilogy or a part of the series. It's just kind of loosely ties in. Right, and it's about this apartment building that this actor moves into, this famous actor moves into, and he's decided he's going to kill himself.
Oh.
And we find out that this building has like a series of like supernatural ghosts in them, and they start to possess him and stuff. And there are like these two guys who are like conjurers, I don't know what word I'd use, who end up becoming like almost like action stars of possession and like just supernatural magic. And I did not expect this movie to be kind of like a kung fu kicker with horror tides, and it was so fun.
Awesome.
Like, I did nap a little bit in it last night.
Well, I would assume so. Yesterday was your sixth movie day.
I've never done that before. It was my test to see how close I could get to a Matt Price number.
I got close with five.
No, but Price is doing 59, so that means mathematically he has to do like around six days, and the rest can be five.
Wow.
I haven't checked his number, his daily thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really like that movie. I'm talking about fun martial arts movies. I saw Man of Tai Chi. And Douglas, let me explain this to you, right? I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably exactly what you think it is.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because it's a dumb movie.
Mm-hmm.
It has some poor story telling, but the action is so fun, right?
Yeah.
I actually want to go so far as to think I think Keanu is a good director because of that action.
Wow.
Right? There's scenes where like there's a training scene, like the first time we see any really not even action, you know, because it's really like sparring training between the guy and his master.
Yeah.
And if you've ever seen like Tai Chi, you know, they have that very like we're holding a ball kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's all about, you know, using your enemy's force mm-hmm. against him.
And it's doing like a whole sequence of that with the two of them
by
against
the way,
each other.
Is it sad that I know that only because of Shaolin Soccer?
let's not talk about how sad that is. Like the way he moves the camera in that, like, I'm not going to say it's original or new or anything, but it feels different seeing it somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it a lot. And there's some great action scenes in there, Douglas. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it might help that it came after Child of God. And I needed a really fun movie at that point in time.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of what I was talking to Courtney about this yesterday morning, is that I discovered this last year, and I'm happy I did it this year, where if we were to just list the number of movies without any limitations in the festival that we would pick for ourselves for like around a list of 40, we would probably come up with around 35 movies that would utterly depress everyone.
Of course.
Right? And I somewhat need to pepper in a couple lighthearted, funner movies
mm-hmm.
to kind of stave off the depression.
Mm-hmm.
And Man of Tai Chi kind of worked for me.
I hear you. But I want us to go back. Your last movie you spoke about was a vampire movie.
Well,
it
wasn't really a vampire movie. It's more.
Listen, it works as a vampire movie for my purposes.
Okay, alright, we'll call it that.
And what I just realized is I don't think we've spoken about our other vampire movie that we saw.
We did? Only Lovers. We talked about the first one.
Okay, well, it's awesome.
Vampire Bowie, played by Loki. Who wouldn't like that movie?
I know, right?
Like, I remember I was talking to my friend Ben about that movie because he hasn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, like, I was telling him it was a vampire movie with Tilda Swinton. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, they should have made her David Bowie. I'm like, that would have been awesome too.
No, of course. As far as I'm concerned, there are two movies that need to be made with Tilda Swinton as a starring role. One, she needs to star as David Bowie. Two, she needs to star as Conan O'Brien. Two things, right? I'm just saying.
Well.
She just looks like both of them. I'm sorry.
Is there anything else you want to highlight that you've seen over the last couple of days?
Over the last couple of days? Well, I watched The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, which I'm kind of surprised you didn't mention because you loved it so much.
Oh.
Which
I was so in action mode right now.
Yeah.
You know, my movies were action movies.
I see. But so, it's usually him and her, but we got to see her and him, which was kind of fun because it's almost like two movies stitched together.
Which Weinstein's just bought.
The Weinstein's just bought, which means it will be one movie haphazardly stitched.
Let's not make that anyway, joke. We'll see what happens.
Okay. So, normally people get to watch the him portion of it, which is the story from James McAvoy's point of view, before they watch the her portion of it, which is the story from the point of view of Jessica Chastain. We watched it in the opposite direction.
The director does note that he wants it to be viewed in whichever way you feel.
Exactly. And it was pretty interesting. You know, I love both actors, Jessica and James. They are very cool. James probably a little more so. And the movie was pretty decent, but I definitely don't love it as much as a few people do.
What I really like about that movie, which is something that they hinted at in the Q&A, but I don't know why anyone needed that question. Like, I figured it out, or at least I decided for myself. Yeah. That's what I saw.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I think we should talk about a little bit about that generally. Is that when you watch them, there are a few scenes which are shared between both stories,
mm-hmm.
right? But you can see obviously that they're different. They're different interpretations of that scene.
Mm-hmm.
I caught it really quickly, and like, I think the first one we see between them is a scene where she comes into his bar.
Yeah,
and I caught really quickly that in her version, you see him pick up the glass and then ask her for the drink. In his version, he waits until he asks her to pick up the glass.
Yeah.
Right. And it gets a little bit more obvious as it goes along.
Yeah.
At first, when I saw it, I thought, oh, continuity error.
Mm-hmm.
Next, as it got more blatant, I'm like, okay, so this is on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it into the way we remember things. I ended up, and based on those moments, I read the entire movie as it's as if she's telling her story and he's telling hers, and it's just about the memory.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They went even further to say that they're like different clothes they wear, but I didn't notice that, to be honest. And such. What were you saying? Sorry.
Well, no. Okay. So that's actually one thing I'm not sure about in that movie, because if you remember the question, right? The question was kind of about a quarter of the question that I would have asked, mm-hmm. right? But I would never ask my question because it shows that I don't understand the movie, right? So the guy's question was like, listen, why are they wearing different clothes? That's really all he asked, right? I saw him wear a blue jacket in this one, and then he was wearing a red jacket in this one.
Was never that blatant.
No, I know, but that's what he was saying. He was like, there's continuity issues, and it's all about the only thing that I saw was the clothes. That's what the person said, right? So I don't care about details like that, because details like that I can definitely chalk to you know, different memories, right? Even small like the thing about it though is that when you're talking about memories, for me it has to do with things like what you said as well, you know, whether he asked first or just went ahead and gave the drink, that kind of thing.
Well,
and like, you know, the way somebody looks as if, yeah, she looked like she wanted to have sex with me, kind of, you know, that kind of thing.
Well,
right?
I mean, to get to a more blatant example, there's a scene in the car.
I know, I'm getting there. And that is why, you know, what kind of got to me. No, the scene in the car isn't so bad, right? Because while that makes zero sense in terms of somebody remembering it, at least I can, hold on, I can and look at that in terms of the person who remembers it always wants to feel in the position of power.
Yeah.
Right? And so if you notice in her story, she went on top of him before they were about to have sex. And in his story, he goes on top of her.
Yeah.
Which essentially, you know, each of them is like, I'm in the seat of power here. Right?
It could be a Rashomon kind of thing.
Well, explain that. I don't think I've watched Rashomon.
Well, Rashomon, for people who have never seen it, it's a famous Kurosawa film, is this basically a court drama.
Mm-hmm.
But what it is there was this incident in the woods, and a guy, this samurai guy died,
mm-hmm.
and they have four witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And the four witnesses are telling their versions of the story as mm-hmm. they remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you kind of finish watching the movie, you realize that each version plays the person telling it mm-hmm. as the most noble.
Mm-hmm. 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 Right, exactly. No, where it kind of came to a head with me was, you know, I was a little bit confused in the car, So I was like, but she was, and he was, and what? But I'm like, alright, fine. Seat up home. Then now, you get to the final scene. Right? There's a final scene when they meet at their old apartment. And at that point, shit just gets crazy. Right?
That's not spoilers.
They're like, continuity. No, well, I'm not trying to spoil. I'm not going to say what happens. I'm just going to say that, you know, the continuity gap just builds and builds and builds until it gets to that final scene where they're just like, you know what? We're going to have two different conversations completely. Right? And at that point, I'm just like, what?
That's why I chalked up the memory, because that leaves it a bit more open. Leaves it a bit more allowance if I leave it to memory. Because, like, part of it is that people tend to want to remember themselves in a better way than they were.
Yeah. And I think that's really all he was trying to do. Now that as I'm talking it out and looking back at what happens, I think that's really what it was.
I can't wait till 3 years from now when this movie comes out, and we can watch it again in the way of his and her to see if we see any difference in how we interpret it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyways, I don't know if we have anything else we want to really highlight, but I wanted to ask you this question, right? Part of the thing of being at TIFF is the fact that all of the filmmakers and the actors are generally here, and they tend to do a lot of Q&As. They're going to be kind of getting very thin from now on.
Yeah, I think that much. Yeah. The longer you go into the...
Because all of them have to go and work.
Yeah.
And most of the press is kind of done at this point.
Yeah.
My question to you is, like, we tend to have a very highfalutin stance on our podcast about we are the right. And Damien even goes on and say he doesn't want to listen to director commentaries because he wants to know he's right and their interpretation is not wrong but just as valid as mine, which is a very valid point of view. I'm curious as to how you kind of responded to having the filmmakers here to talk about them right there in front of your face, because I don't know how often you will turn on a director commentary. I'm willing to guess never.
No, let me tell you what happened to me. I started to work, is what happened to me, right? So I actually love director commentary and all of that extra jazz, right? I remember once I saw Fight Club director commentary and was laughing my ass off. The same thing with, I think I watched Snatch and a few others, right? It's all about time for me. So right now, there are at least 20, 25 movies that I've purchased that are in the case that have not even been opened in terms of watching them.
All right,
much less director commentary. So that's my main issue. Right? But I was actually really surprised about how willing these guys are to come to all of these showings, because I figured, you know, I'm paying for a regular person package. The only thing I'm getting out of this regular person package is watching movies that I probably couldn't watch otherwise, which was good enough for me. And then almost every movie I've been to, except for two notable ones.
Yeah.
No, one notable one and a couple of others. The person, whether it's a director or the producers or the actors, have all been there to talk about the movie, to field questions, and that is just, you know,
so yeah, how have you felt about the actual Q&As themselves? Have you gotten to the point where you're tired to hear, I love this movie, let me ask a dumb question right now, or?
No, I don't really care about that. I'm always a different view than a lot of people, right? I might be a snob, but I don't go to certain snob levels. For example, I know a lot of people keep saying, oh, I hate this R thing. Why do they do that?
No, I love the R.
Yeah, but I've heard other people kind of complain about it.
I think that comes a lot from, it's kind of like, from what I've heard, that came from the Midnight Madness crowd.
And
when you go to some Midnight Madness ones, I think the first one is very tame. I'm sorry you saw that one.
Well, I have two more, so. Yeah. We'll see.
They've been very passionate and very fun about it. And like every night I've been since then, it's just been really fun stuff. And then now when it bleeds over, it's kind of like, why are you taking my thing? I want my thing back. And you know, everyone is like that eventually with some things. I mean, like I've been like that about Man United with people. Right? where like whenever I meet someone who's like I love Man United, and I'm like, name the starting 11, and I can't name it. I get angry. And so I understand it in that vein. Mm-hmm. And also, you have to understand, these people have been hearing it for 30 years. Mm-hmm. This is your first year for you.
I suppose.
Actually, 25. Midnight is 25 years old. Mm-hmm. If I'm writing it, starting with Midnight.
Okay. That's fair enough. But I don't know. I'm just like, you know, I understand making it be fun. Fun is good. I don't actually take part in it because I don't really care that much. But yeah. Mm. Oh, but one thing I wanted to highlight. One last movie that I really liked.
We've been going long today, but sure.
Oh, okay. All right.
Keep going.
Let me just do it quickly. The Honeymoon.
Oh.
Which was a really cool movie. I think it's from the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. And it's about a wedding and a ceremony after. Not a ceremony. The reception afterwards. And about a wedding crasher who is able to kind of. He's the. I guess you could call him the protagonist or the antagonist. He kind of brings to light a lot of. I guess almost the underbelly of this not family, but the husband in the marriage couple, and you know, so you get to learn some secrets about somebody, and they're kind of crazy, and it's a real good I guess exposition sort of movie. I really like that one.
Anyways, I think with that we can end this episode of Breakfast with Douglas and Andrew. I don't think we're recording the next one during breakfast, but we'll see. Keep listening out for more tip updates from us and follow us on Twitter. Douglas is DJR, lost his name. I'm Gman Reviews. That's it, and yeah, later.